This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
And I've been having a lot of fun these last few weeks with technology. The iPhone 6 and 6 Plus are out.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's talking about them. The iPad Air 2 is out. And so Apple's just really having a bumper crop of new products.
New stuff. It's harvest time.
Out the store. Yeah. You wonder what's going to be coming up next. And, of course, the Chinese have been hacking into the iCloud because governments do not like the new security that's embedded in the iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
The NSA doesn't like it because, Apple has made it so you really can't get at this data, even if you subpoena them, because Apple doesn't store unencrypted data. So they've actually... This was their workaround so that they wouldn't have any issues. And so Google is doing similar things. So NSA and the Chinese government don't like it because the government likes to track what we're doing.
Of course.
And the companies don't like it. So Apple's made some very good headway there. And some guy was treated for Google Glass addiction. Google Glass.
I'm wondering where you were driving with that.
I've got to be very careful because we've got the Google Glass there at Stratford, and I've got to be very careful not to get addicted to it. And there's some security problems with PowerPoint, and I'll show you how to get rid of those. It's actually a pretty big security flaw in it. And employers are worried about critical thinking skills. They've been talking about this, and so... they said, they want people that can actually figure stuff out.
Well, that's yeah.
We've always known that, but now people are surveying it and they're saying this is what they would like.
We're having. Don't you think this is a more prevalent problem in today's society? People, we're producing a new generation who can't figure things out.
Yeah, and they I think the part of the problem is the education system is in the last decade, where it was all based on memorizing and being able to recall information. And in the new world, information is at your fingertips. And so now it's a matter of figuring out which information is relevant, using the information, drawing conclusions, and doing something. It's a completely different skill set. And the educational system has got to get on board with that. And so employers are saying, hey, guys, let's get some graduates here that can do a little better job of that. And, of course, it was a huge, huge mailbag.
Giant.
Yes.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
Oh, let me get this thing on there. Oh.
Oh.
It was huge. Mr. Big Voice, you could have helped me.
Nah, he could. It's a union thing.
It's a union deal, I know. We got an email from Mary. Dr. Schertz, I added. Now, Mary, if you remember, I got to get. She sent in. She had Uma. And she, which was a voice over IP system, which I'd highly recommended, she got it. And when she got it at home, it was giving her the voice was breaking up. When she would talk to someone, her voice would be broken up when they would listen to it at the other end. So I said, well, Mary, you better check your upload and download speed. So Uma ran a speed test, and she got 10 megabits upload and 5 megabit download speeds. And she has Fios, no TV, no phone. And... actually, those upload and download speeds are actually good enough for voice over IP. There's no problem with those bandwidths. Now, the question is that the bandwidth you actually have when you're encountering the problem? Now, I looked at her speed test, and there was not a latency number. Latency is also an issue. Some people were getting latencies of over 200 milliseconds. If you get latencies more than 100 milliseconds, which would be a tenth of a second, there are 1,000 milliseconds is 1 second, so 100 milliseconds is a tenth of a second. If you've got latency, in other words, delays packet delay is more than a tenth of a second, it does affect voice quality. So I didn't see the latency number there, so that could be the issue. So I went and did a little research. Because I'll tell you, I've also got Verizon Fios, and I got no problem. I got great voice quality. I got the same upload download speed. I got great voice quality. I set it up a few years ago, and it's never stopped working. Well, I went on to the, I started looking around, and I started looking at the discussion forums, and there are some people who have Verizon Fios that are getting this voice breakup problem, and apparently it has to do with quality of service in the way Verizon treats the packets that are coming through. You see, whenever a packet comes into a router, if it's like if time is really important, you give it a high quality of service and you zip it right through. And, you know, if it's like email, doesn't really matter that much. You can give a lower quality of service time and you just delay it a little bit and then the email shows up a second later. But it doesn't matter with email, for instance. So this quality of service was an issue. And so UMA... People complained. I went to the UMA discussion board. So UMA they were actually responding to these comments. And so UMA then was working with Verizon, and they were figuring out which of the upstream servers or upstream points, routing points, were causing this problem. And they were rerouting it, and they solved the problem for a number of those customers. But it really depended on the issue. So I guess I'm just lucky in that I'm not encountering any of those issues.
Mm-hmm.
Now Mary said she had trouble, calling the service desk and getting a support. If you go to the UMA website, there is a live chat button. I'd suggest, Mary, I'd recommend that you go to the discussion forums and put in your particular problem in your zip code, because the service people at UMA, they may not talk to you on the phone, but they are reading those discussion forums. And I think that would be helpful. There's also a live chat button. So that's my advice. I was thinking you didn't have a problem, but maybe there is a problem with this upstream router stuff when I did a little research on it. So why don't you check on that, Mary, and then get back to me and tell me if it worked for you. We got an email from Led by Brain. Dear Dr. Schertz, now this is how my main professional Gmail account is set up. She gave me a screenshot because she wanted to make certain that she could keep her email. Some of her Gmails were disappearing. So it turned out she's enabled POP and IMAP, and she's archived deleted emails. And she wants to save all of her emails for at least 18 months. She wondered whether this was all right. She was configuring her Apple Mail client. She found an article on the internet that says Gmail sent mail is not safe. Thank you. Actually, Gmail doesn't delete anything, Mary. I mean, I don't know where Led by Brain. Gmail doesn't delete anything except what's in the deleted folder, the trash folder, and the spam folder. And those, they stay for 30 days. They don't delete anything. Now, a lot of people will say, oh, I lost an email that I sent. Because what happens is if somebody responds to that email, the entire conversation goes to the inbox. And then it disappears from sent. And then if you decide, oh, I'm just going to delete that response, you need to delete the whole conversation, then you delete also the sent mail.
Mm-hmm.
So most of the disappearing sent mails are because of that. But I don't think that actually Google is deleting anything. But she, you know, Led by Brain lost some of her emails. The main thing is when you configure it in IMAP simply looking at when you configure your Apple Mail client, set it up with IMAP, which is then just going to look at the server, and you can delete it on your local mail client, and it will delete it on the server at the same time, and so they're always synchronized, and you shouldn't actually lose anything. But it looks to me like you've got it set up perfectly. But I didn't see your Apple Mail client set up. I just saw how you configured your Gmail to know whether you've got it completely right. I have to know how you configure your Apple Mail client. We got an email from Duke. Dear Tech Talk, I coach a local sports team. Oh, I guess he's Coach Duke.
Coach
Duke. And all the communication with my team is via Hotmail.
Oh, boy.
Unfortunately, I can't access my email. How do I get into my Hotmail account if I can no longer have access to the phone number that I used when I set up the account, or the email that I used when I set up the account several years ago. Thanks, Duke, an Ohio coach.
He's of the Ohio people.
Oh, I had no idea we had an Ohio coach up there.
Oh boy.
Okay. Okay, this is the thing with Hotmail. Like when you travel to different countries, Microsoft, because of identity, because people are trying to steal your accounts, if you go to another country and try to log into your Hotmail account, say from India, they're going to assume that it's some guy trying to hack your account. So even if you do know the password, they're going to ask for a two-factor authentication. So they're going to send a code to your phone. Now, and so if you don't have that phone when you're in India, you won't be able to log on until you get back. They could also send the two-factor authentication if you request to an email account. If you don't have access to the email account, you're gone. And so it turns out that Hotmail, in particular, had huge problems with accounts being stolen. So Microsoft has really cracked down on it. And it's critical that you maintain your recovery information. So, like, if you change your cell phone number and you don't go into your Hotmail account and put up a new cell phone number, that's a problem. If you change your email accounts and don't update your recovery email accounts in Hotmail, that's a problem. So, Coach Duke, you've been actually failing at maintaining your Hotmail account, and you can't communicate with your team.
Do you think Coach Duke might do better than by getting off of Hotmail and on something that we all use in the 21st century, like Gmail or something?
Yeah, it could be Gmail, but I think he likes Hotmail.
Oh, okay.
So you've got to update this. Now, if you really don't have access to the phone or to the email, there is a way to recover your email account, but Microsoft makes it extremely difficult. So you've got to go and you've got to put in your name, your birth date, your location. You've got to answer some security questions if you've set some up. They might want to ask you for other passwords that you've used in the past, which is kind of a good indicator that you really have some history of the account. They might ask you for the subject line of any of the emails that you recently sent.
Mm-hmm.
They might ask you for the names of some of the folders that you've created in the account. They might ask you for the email addresses of any contacts which you've recently sent an email to. They might ask you for billing information, including a credit card that you've associated with the account. So the goal is really simple, to have you put down enough ancillary data that somebody else couldn't look up to prove that you're the rightful account holder. So you fill out all this stuff if you've exhausted all of your two-factor authorization methods because you don't have access to them. Then you send that information in. It's not automatic.
Mm-hmm.
A person looks at it, and they decide, or actually Microsoft doesn't say who looks at it, but it takes 30 days for them to make a judgment. And one reason they do that is that also prevents unauthorized attempts to steal your account, because what they do, as soon as this request is made, they'll send out an email and notice to the cell phone number that somebody's trying to reset the password. And if the rightful owner has access to those accounts, they're going to say, wait a minute here, I didn't do that. So the 30-day delay is really meant to protect you. Now, there's one other thing that you could have done, which, Coach Duke, you didn't. You could have set up a recovery password. And what you can do, you can set up a recovery. You can go into your Hotmail account and set up a recovery code. It's like a 25-digit number. You can print it out, and you can put that printed out number in some safe place in your house. And then if, in fact, you have that particular 25-digit number, you can reset your password without all this hullabaloo. But it sounds like, Coach, that you didn't do that. So best of luck. I think if you provide this information, you'll be able to get back your account in 30 days or so. We got an email from Alex. Dear Doc and Jim, I'd like to get in touch with my old college friend. It's been over 15 years, and I'd like to reconnect with her. Where do I start? Thanks, Alex in Reston. Well, Alex, if you'd like to get an email account, email addresses are hard to get. You can if you're lucky. because finding somebody's email address is hard because there's no central database for emails. There's no phone book for emails.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a name, it's not enough because you're going to search for a name and you're searching the whole world. So there could be 1,000 John Smiths and you don't know who that is. There could be thousands of people with the same name. And so you got to figure out what it is. Also, you've got all these free email accounts with information that's got nothing to do with the person who you actually are. And so maybe they're kind of masking it. Well, what I do when I'm looking up someone, I go to Google first. I Google them because maybe they've been in the news or something. And you can, you know, if they've got any sort of notorious behavior, it could be showing up on the Internet. You never know.
Right.
And so check that first. Because she may have a presence on the web. Now, if you have a town where she resided at least one time, that could be useful. Because then you can search for that location. You could check Facebook. You could check Yahoo. You could check LinkedIn. Like one time I was looking for somebody I'd worked with at BDM many years ago. And I tell you, I couldn't find Chris. This was a fiber optics guy. And I went into LinkedIn, and I finally located him through LinkedIn. But I had his full name, including his middle name, and that was very good for getting him on LinkedIn. I couldn't find him any other way. Now, if you know their employer, you could check a subdirectory. Now, you can also check the online version of the phone book, because all the phone books have online versions. In fact,
yep.
Google used to give phone numbers for people. You'd put in their name, and it would list their phone number. And then everybody complained about it. Now, Google was just taking that phone number from public phone books that are on the web. But then people complained about it, and so now Google started blocking that. And in fact, if you search for yourself on Google and there's information you don't like there, you can ask Google to stop displaying it. If you want, you can go in there and you can remove that data from your search. Now, these are all things that you can do, and then you can also do the paid search. Now,
that's kind of hit and miss, though, isn't it?
Well, I've used it once, Jim.
And it worked for you?
I used it once. I wanted to track down somebody from college. And so I went there, and I knew where this person had lived
mm-hmm.
for one. I knew where they'd lived one time after college. And I also knew their middle name. So I put in their full name, and I put in this one location. And that was enough to pin it down, and ultimately I was able, they were able to, and they gave me a list of names with and I also knew the approximate birth date, because they weren't there.
Yeah, any ancillary information you have will help your search.
Yeah, and so then I was able to pin it down to like four or five, and then I could pick the one that was there, and so then I paid $29, and that search gave me every single address that person had been at.
Wow.
It gave me all the names of their kids, their name of their spouse. It gave a huge amount of information for $29, but it would not give me an email address because they didn't want you to use this like to bother somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But they said, if you want us to, we will email them as an intermediary. And so you could write an email, and they would do an intermediary.
And that way, if they want to contact you, then they can get back to you, right?
Yeah, if they want to contact me, they mm-hmm. could get back to me. So I sent an email, but you know they didn't want to contact me, so then it just ended. but they did give phone numbers all the way mm-hmm. through at every location. So the paid searches, I actually think, do work, because what the paid searches do, they go through. These are all public records. So they look at the sale of houses,
yep.
purchasing of houses. They look at speeding tickets and anything that's on the so they basically consolidate all the public records,
mm-hmm.
and then they try to match it up against the parameters that you've gotten. And I'm telling you, most people, you can track them down one way or another because there's so much information available.
You know, if you're cheap. Like me. Mm-hmm. One other thing you could do is when you Google search somebody, of course, you know, not just the name, but, you know, if a city or something will help you narrow it. But mm-hmm. if you Google search images and you find a picture of that person someplace, that might help you.
Yeah.
Oh, because that's the John Smith I'm looking for.
Yeah, you can mm-hmm. you can do that. So you just put in the name, and then there's a choice up there like says web images.
Right.
So you click on images, you get all the images, and, you know, this could be all the images that are on Facebook that they wanted people to forget about,
mm-hmm.
that Google – never forgets about.
Oh, no.
It's always
never, never,
there.
Never.
Okay, we got, uh-oh.
Oh, no, back to Ohio.
We got an email from Tungen, Ohio. Oh, this is the Ohio crew. I don't know what's going on.
Is she having Hotmail trouble, too?
I don't know. Dear Tech Talk, I'm trying to upgrade my iPhone to iOS 8.1 and can't because I don't have enough memory. I deleted all my pictures after copying them to the to my laptop. I don't know. That would, you'd figure that.
This is another problem.
You'd figure that have too many pictures on their iPhone. And I still don't have enough memory. What are my options? Thanks, Tung in Ohio. Well, Tung, this is a problem, actually, because iOS 8 takes a boatload of memory.
Mm-hmm.
And so, first of all, if you can't do it, it's hard to do an air upgrade because it takes so much memory. So most people want to hook it to their laptop and then do the upgrade through iTunes. So your laptop downgrades the operating system. It unpacks it, and then it just simply transfers it to the iPhone. And you need less memory in your iPhone to make that happen. Now, one reason that it's hard to clear your memory in the iPhone, I want to explain what happens. You've got the pictures that you took, and that's in your pictures, and you've got your what do they call that? The camera roll.
Right.
You've got the camera roll, which has all the pictures. So you delete all the pictures from the camera roll. Well, it turns out that the operating system also has deleted pictures. So then it goes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So they're still saved on your iPhone. They just moved to deleted, and they sit there for 30 days. So you have to delete them from there.
Didn't even know that existed.
In addition, you could delete all of those and all those things, and you'd still have maybe three megabytes of pictures. All the pictures that are in PhotoStream are also stored on your phone.
Mm.
So just deleting the pictures in the camera roll typically doesn't help you, because then it just go to delete it. Now,
yep.
you could go to delete it and delete those if you wanted to, but then you'd still have all the PhotoStream stuff. So then you've got to delete the PhotoStream, or you've got to disable PhotoStream in order to really free up memory. Now, the other way to free up memory is that so what I did, I deleted all my pictures, but I didn't want to undo my PhotoStream, because then I liked having the PhotoStream backup. So I left it there, and I still didn't have enough memory. So then I unsynchronized all my music, and then it deleted all the music from my iPhone, but it left it on my laptop. Then I was able to go through the process and upgrade. So it sounds like that Tung in Ohio has some picture problem and some photo stream problem.
I think Tung has had other picture problems she's alluded to in the past.
Yeah, I know. So that's it. Now, I would recommend that you don't give out the password to your iCloud account, because all your photo stream pictures are going to be on iCloud, and that could be a problem.
Yes.
We got an email from Alice in Washington. Dear Doc and Jim, I use Gmail for all my business activities, and I'm worried that I have no backup. What's the best way to back up my Gmail account? Well, this is actually an interesting thing, because a lot of people use Gmail or Hotmail for everything, and then if it's gone, it's gone. So one easy way to back up your Gmail account is to enable POP3, Post Office Protocol 3, because what that does, so you could have one computer, one desktop, And you could have a mail program like Apple Mail, or you could have like Microsoft Live Mail or Thunderbird. There are a lot of mail clients. And then you can basically set that client up to talk to your email account using the Post Office Protocol. And but when you set that up, be very careful when you go into the configuration and click something that says click on this option that says leave the messages on the server. Because if you don't do that, as soon as it downloads them to your local mail client, it will delete them from the server.
Mm-hmm.
So then what you can do is you can simply download the email, and it will synchronize with the server, and the Post Office Protocol will just download all the email right to your local client. And so then your local client serves as kind of a backup of the Gmail. So that would be a simple way to do it. I mean, you could export the thing and go through it, but this is just have one particular laptop or desktop, and you just periodically go in and just synchronize it, and it will just download everything. It'll still leave all your mail there, because you've told it to. It just downloads everything. Now, the first time you do this, it might take kind of a while because it's going to download all the pictures. But that would be a way to back it up.
There you go.
So that was a great thing. We love your emails. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu, and we'll either email you back or we'll cover it on the show.
And the show is called Tech Talk Radio, heard every Saturday here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM, HD2. Stand by. More of Tech Talk coming up in just a minute.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment. What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University Innovative Approach that turns marketable skills into an employable edge to get you hired faster in today's hottest fields like cybersecurity, data mining, and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the classroom, right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn by doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University, changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Big Voice. Today we're going to feature Hakan William Lee. Hakan William Lee. Hakan.
I'm working on this.
Yeah, why don't you look at it? It's like an. He's from Norway, and we got an A with a little circle above it. I'm not really quite sure on the pronunciation from Norway, since I really.
You're not Norwegian.
I'm not Norwegian. So this is Hakan William Lee. This would be the DC pronunciation. He is
the Schertzian pronunciation.
Yes, the Schertzian pronunciation. Yes, indeed.
Uh huh.
Think we should take a break here before we get into this?
Why don't we take before we're all flummoxed with this guy's name?
Yeah, that's
right. I think we should take a break because.
Oh yeah. I walk in.
Hi, folks. This is David Burt.
Don't stop. Make it
You hate this, don't you?
not one of my favorite intros. I your production.
Do you have an intro upstairs?
I do. I do have an intro.
Upstairs. No, you don't.
Yes, I do.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do. Hey, don't give me that Renee Zellweger face.
I'm thinking it's much more.
I heard you.
I think
this
it's
morning.
Some kind of dogs barking or something upstairs. What do you think?
Does the Mr. Big Voice guy? And now from the glass enclosed nerve center, here's David Byrd.
Well, what are you boys talking about? The elevator in the sky? What are we doing?
Do you
have the iPhone 6 yet?
No, and I'm not going to get it either.
The iPhone 6 Plus?
No, I don't care. I just don't care. I really don't.
How about the iPad Air 2?
I have an iPad Mini. That's all I need.
Yeah, really?
No,
we don't have to do the Pavlov's dog thing every year. Oh, Apple's got something new. Well, let's all run to the stores and drop $800 on it. Hey, I don't have that kind of dough. I don't need a big
iPhone. You're in radio.
Hey, excuse me, let me ask you a question. Do you want a big screen TV in your pants? No, really. You want to put one in your pants?
Hey, now. Or are you just happy to see me?
Really. Where do you put that stinking iPhone?
I don't.
Let's put a big screen TV right in my pants. Let's walk around with it.
I was just telling Doc before the show, my daughter calls me a couple weeks ago. I think my iPhone's dying. I said, well, it either works or it doesn't. It's not like this gradual.
Yeah.
I said, you want a six, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I got her a six. And guess, I upgraded to plus a 5.
Or to 6?
No, just the smaller one. Yeah. I don't know.
Come on, why?
Toast around in your pocket.
So the only advantage of the 6 Plus is that it can serve as like a little iPad for you.
Yeah.
And you can turn it on the side. So if you don't have an iPad.
Yeah, that's the whole point. If you already have an iPad, they're stupid to go buy an iPhone 6 Plus.
Now, the one advantage that it has, because the battery is basically a thin two-layer thing just below the screen. So it's a bigger screen.
Mm-hmm.
So people with iPhone 6 Plus are reporting 2-day battery life.
2 days?
2 days.
Wow.
Because battery is so much bigger.
Right. Because the battery is basically the size of the device, right? Wafer thin.
It's a thin layer of stuff just below the screen.
That's why your iPad lasts longer than your phone.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
that's it. There you go. Now you've got the message.
You learned something today.
I got it. So I don't need the iPhone 6 Plus.
So this is what happened.
Yeah, put an Etch-a-Sketch in your pants. How's that feel?
People are buying.
Settle down over there.
A lot of people are buying the 6 Plus before they felt it, and as soon as they get it, it's so big they're returning it.
Well, that's stupid. I mean, what's a holster look like for that thing?
It's going to look stupid.
I've talked to two women that like it because they have a purse.
Well, yeah, fine. But are you going to buy a man bag?
I'm not buying a man bag. So
yeah,
there
you are.
No, I'm not.
Hey, Jimmy.
No way, Jose. I'm not buying a man bag.
3 weeks from now, he's coming in with a man bag.
Only if it has like a Stratford University logo on it.
Okay, well, that's.
And it's one of those freebie, like.
It's got to be free, you know.
And this is wonderful. Won it somewhere.
So somebody at Stratford bought an iPhone 6 Plus without holding it, and they got it in, and they hated it. So they went to, it was AT&T, but they bought it from the Apple store on AT&T plan.
Yeah, they got the plan.
So it turns out, this is very important, if you return it within 14 days, there's no restocking fee or anything.
No, nothing.
But if you wait to the 15th day, you're hosed. And sometimes they count the 14 days from the day it was shipped.
Oh, wow.
Not the day you received it.
No kidding.
No, wait a minute. Now, guys, let's be honest here. Aren't we regressing? Aren't we going back to the lunchbox phones?
Isn't that what
we wanted to get away from?
You stuffing your Sansevieria slacks.
Yeah, I got a big screen TV in my pants now. Mm-hmm. Walking around, very uncomfortable.
It's a family show. It is just too big. So what he did, he went to the Apple store. And they logged on, and they said, I'm sorry, we can't return this because it's blocked by AT&T.
What?
So then he was at the mall. So he went to the AT&T store, and AT&T store, they said, well, I'm sorry, you bought it from Apple, so you can't return it here. So he took the manager of the AT&T store down to the Apple store, and the two managers figured out how he could return the phone.
Well, listen, we
that must have been fun to watch.
We all know why.
It was fun to watch.
We all know why Apple came up with the 6 Plus, because of the Galaxy, the Samsung.
Sure.
I know. That's
issues
right.
over here. But I think Samsung people and Apple people are two different sets of folks.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree.
I don't want a big honking phone that takes two hands to work.
Does it take two hands?
I don't want a two-handed phone.
I see people in public walking around with their giant Samsung. I'm thinking, what century are they from?
Yeah, let's get an Edgar Winter strap for my phone. I can put it around my neck and walk around like I'm playing the organ. I mean, come on, really? It's called a cell phone. It's mobile. How can it be mobile?
When it's the size of a...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
Jumbotron.
And for you folks who already bought the regular iPad, the mini pad, the regular phone, what are you doing buying an iPhone 6 Plus? Really, why?
I would not want it. Although I've talked to two women that like it. It fits in their purse.
Are you the same guys that have to buy the new North Face jacket to go with it? No, really. Really? Do you have to do
with
that?
The special iPhone zipper on there.
Now, listen.
You got Apple pants, don't you, Doc?
No.
I
heard the designers are now redesigning pockets to fit... fit the iPhone.
Oh God! I've got a picture window on my chest where I put the phone. Come on, really?
Now here's
this is stupid.
Here's the other thing that Apple did do something innovative with their iPad Air release. They came out with
what's innovative? Help me out.
They came up with the Apple SIM.
SIM card for the iPad?
But it's an Apple SIM.
Well, what does that mean?
See, it used to be you'd get a SIM card for AT&T, a SIM card for T-Mobile, a SIM card for Sprint.
Right.
Now you can have an Apple SIM and you select the carrier from a drop-down menu.
Get out of here.
Isn't that's the new Apple SIM.
Is that only for the new iPad?
Yeah. But isn't this was, I think, the biggest innovation that came out.
I'm not liking this news. Okay. Yeah.
So what Apple wants to do is actually make the carriers irrelevant.
And they're doing
so you take your iPad Air 2
right.
to India, mm-hmm. drop down menu, you pick a local data plan for it. Boom. And you don't
So if I go to Costa Rica.
Yeah.
Well, so your device will automatically recognize where you are and find the carriers for that place.
But here's what we've got: AT&T, or rather, Apple now has T-Mobile, AT&T, and Sprint on,
mm-hmm.
and they have one company from UK, EE, on it.
EE.
But now, what's going to happen? I've never heard of EE, but it's so. What's going to happen though? Pretty mm-hmm. soon, all the carriers are going to realize. Wait a minute here. If I'm not on the drop down menu, I'm going to lose business.
That's right. True.
So there's going to. So this was like the opening salvo, and I think eventually all the carriers will get on it, and then the carriers are going to be. They're just wholesale providers of bandwidth.
Yep. Wow.
And it's all going to be about Apple.
Wow.
Apple's doing the same thing with Apple. The other, is Apple Pay.
Well, help me out with this iPhone 6. They're saying that you can get the Renee Zellweger software in the iPhone 6 in case you want to change the face of the phone. That was a long way to swim.
That was a long way to go. I was wondering where you're going.
I know, man.
Hey.
I'm sorry.
See, this is because Johnny Ives, who's the design guy.
You name dropper. Listen to him.
Is also in charge of the software for the iPhone. Yeah. So he's making the software part of the design element.
So
you see,
what are you looking at?
What kind of jacket do you have on? What does this say?
I don't know what it
says.
Male
cougar. What is that? What does that say?
I have no idea what it says.
No, it says what country? Free country. Free country.
I have no idea. I have no idea what it says.
Big cougar. Yeah,
so this Apple SIM, I think, is the biggest development.
That is a big development.
Now, how about Apple Pay?
About the SIM thing, SIM card. Is this going to be, are you going to be able to retrofit other Apple devices with
that's a good question.
At the current time, no.
Does it look like the other SIM cards?
It doesn't fit into anything else. No. But you can see where this is going. It's eventually going to be system-wide. This is like their opening salvo to sort of take over that market, and so this is the beginning.
Doc, last question for me because I have to roll out of here.
You got another job, right?
Yeah, but see, I think we should talk about Apple Pay.
I don't know if I trust this yet.
The first problem with Apple Pay was anybody that used it who has a Bank of America account. Every time you charge it, it would double charge.
Ooh.
Oh, great!
And so then they went back to Apple, and Apple said, because we keep all of your data, confidential, and we don't even know what you do, we don't know if they're double charged or not. So then they went to Bank of America, and they found the software glitch. So now they're fixing it.
Okay.
And so now that's fixed. But Apple Pay is going to make it's going to make plastic irrelevant.
I hope so.
It's because you're just going to tap your phone.
Yeah. Well.
Put on your and use your thumbprint to authenticate, which is a lot better.
The thumbprint is a lifesaver on this deal.
I don't like this because it means I got to get a 6. I don't want a 6.
I don't want a 6.
I don't want a 6.
I don't want a 6.
I like my 5. Apple, Dad, I don't want a 6.
You've got to get a 6 to get near field communication, which is what Apple says.
I don't want a 6.
That's the only reason that I'm going to get the 6 is I want to get near field communication.
No, that's not the
only reason. He wants a man bag.
I want Apple Pay.
Where's the yellow flag? Throw the flag on this plate. That is obviously not true, Doc.
Okay.
Come on. I mean, it's a nice conversation to have, but you know.
He wants the man bag and the
strap. He wants a man bag.
Mm-hmm.
It's
a clutch.
The male cougar iPhone bag.
I also like to have the fastest internet connection in the cul-de-sac.
Yeah. I know.
Speed does matter.
Weren't you guys going to a break before I said that?
Yeah.
No, we weren't. We were just starting something. We made space. We made space
for me.
For you.
Okay. We're getting ready to do profiles in IT, and we just delayed it to have this critical conversation here.
We were going to do profiles in IT of a guy whose name we can't pronounce.
That's right.
Exactly.
That's right.
But he had nothing to do with the space elevator.
Or Renee's. Bill Wigger.
No, okay, not
right. Well, we're not sure of that yet.
Am I being too fast? Okay, sorry. Yeah. I have to leave now. Okay. It's been
that's
fun.
That's all you came down
for. That's all I came down for, just to work this out.
Okay, very good.
It works. Take it upstairs and use it.
Goodbye.
Thank you, David. Doc, I think we should adjourn momentarily here. This is Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. Stand by. We promise Profiles in IT is coming up right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio.
I think I found something.
IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Change your life. Put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work, and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Master's in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tysons Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Change your life. Take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio.
Wait a minute. Now you're good.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Now we're going to get back on track with...
Hold on.
Mr. Big Voice.
I'm busy over here.
Yeah, thank you very much. Now we're going to talk about Håkon Wiemli.
Well, we need to call in the Norwegian judge first. Okay. We actually did some homework here. This is how.
Håkon Wiemli.
Okay, Håkon Wiemli. Yeah, thank
you. Håkon Wiemli.
Håkon Wiemli. That's right. You know, it's really nice having somebody from Norway right in the studio with us. Really livens things.
Håkon Wiemli.
Oh yes, thank you, thank you, thank you. Okay, now you can go back to your desk now.
Okay.
Håkon Wiemli.
That's all she knows how to say.
Håkon Wiemli is a web pioneer and a standards activist, best known for proposing the concept of cascading style sheets while working at CERN in 1994. I'll explain why that's important, and it is very important.
You're going to have to.
If you are surfing the web, you have been using them, and you love them. You just don't know why. Håkon Wiemli was born in 1965 in Halden, Norway. He attended Østfold University College and West Georgia College.
At what point did we lose control of the
show? I don't know. It's like when we had these the rude interruption.
That's probably when it
happened. In 1991, he received a Master of Science in Visual Studies from the MIT Media Lab while working at CERN. After the Media Lab, we worked there for a while, then he went to CERN. And while working at CERN with Tim Berners-Lee, who, of course, was the inventor of the World Wide Web, he proposed the concept of cascading style sheets. This was in 1994. Now, he showcased cascading style sheets by integrating these style sheets into the Arena web browser to show that actually it was functioning. Now, this is why the cascading style sheet is important. It separated content and the markup language from the formatting. You know, if you remember, you could go in and you could format a document by selecting a certain font, some bold, italics, different layout and all. And you could go in and you could hand code every particular element with a particular style function, and you could do that with HTML. But then suppose you'd want to come along and change the total look and feel of the website. If you had simply assigned header types or different types of tagging to each of these elements in the document, and you had a style sheet that would assign the font and whether it's bold and the indent and all of that stuff. You could separate the formatting from the content, and you could come in and use a style sheet then to completely change the look and feel of the website. So this separation of formatting from content on the web is essentially what cascading style sheets allowed. And now style sheets have been used in word processing documents for a long time. Like Microsoft Word has style sheets, and they've been used for a long time. And that's, people that have done proposal writing know that style sheets are really, really useful. So he pioneered this on the web, and he had a fundamental impact on web typography, web aesthetics, and web accessibility, because he built into it web accessibility. Then after leaving CERN, he went to W3C, which is a company started by Tim Berners-Lee, a nonprofit, which stands for W3, World Wide Web Consortium, so W3C. And then he developed the cascading style sheets into W3C recommendations, and they became standards. Now, VM Lee.
Nicely done.
VM Lee. Now, his mom calls him Huckum VM Lee, but, his friends call him VM. VM Lee targeted Microsoft's Internet Explorer due to its poor support for standards. And he said, we cannot use formatting of objects on the web. We've got to have a more, indirect way to format them using style sheets rather than have direct formatting of objects. And Microsoft, in the beginning with Internet Explorer, had their own standards, and they just sort of ignored the other standards. And it was hard to write web pages for all the different browsers. And he basically went after Internet Explorer. Now the current version of Internet Explorer is in pretty good alignment with the standards. But how come VM Lee put a lot of pressure on Internet Explorer on that thing? He basically also campaigned for browsers to support downloadable fonts in a common font format. You see, in the old days, he did this in 2000. Remember in the old days, you'd go to a website and maybe your browser didn't have the fonts that that particular website wanted to use, and it was like a big project to figure out the font and download the font. Or suppose you go to a Chinese website, and it was just, you'd see gibberish. You'd have to download the Chinese sites. Now, because of the standards that Wickham Lee set up, you go there, you don't have the font, your browser just automatically downloads it. You don't even know it. It just, there's a little delay, and then it comes up. And that was Huckum VM Lee's, initiative and passion. He was always trying to make the web more accessible to standardized browsers, to make it easier for just the public to use. That was his passion. By 2011, this was 5 years after he proposed it, all the major browsers implemented downloadable fonts this way. Now, in 2007, he started a campaign for web video elements because, he said we should be able to put in a video on a web page in a standardized way so you don't have to download all sorts of viewers and everything. So he started campaigning for that in 2007, and now it's very easy to embed video into web pages using these standards. So he was, in each of these problem areas, he was the standards guy. Now, he wrote a book on cascading style sheets that he co-authored with Bert Boss, who's the guy he wrote the W3C standard with. They produced this book in HTML with cascading style sheets. He said, look, cascading style sheets are so good that I can write an entire book and format it with cascading style sheets, which he did. Then he took this book, which had been formatted with cascading style sheets, exported it, and converted it to PDF, and then he printed it in the Prince XML form with the Prince XML formatter. And so he actually produced an entire book and formatted an entire book using his standard just to prove it could be done. And then he got interested in printing because then he had to print the book. So he had to find a way to connect the web to printers and actually a pagination. And also then he worked on print standards for web pages because he wanted people to do that easily. Everything was driven by ease of use for the user, to get formatting on the web in a convenient way so you could use it. Over the time he was at working on these projects, he worked for W3C, World Wide Web Consortium. He worked for CERN. He worked for MIT Media Labs. He worked for a Norwegian telecom research organization called Televerket.
I think that's close enough.
Thank you very much.
We're not going to do this.
In December of 1996.
Huckum VM Lee.
Yeah, thank you. Huckum VM Lee. That's what his mother called. Maybe that's his mother.
It could be.
That sounds like his mother, because that's like, Occam Vim Lee. Well, it's dinner. Occam, it's dinner time.
If you're going to find out how to pronounce somebody's name, you might as well go right at the source
exactly.
And ask mom, right?
Exactly. In December 1996, he became known as the Cascading Style Sheet W3C Recommendation Editor. So he was sort of master guru for Cascading Style Sheets. In April of 1999, he joined Opera Software. Of course, they have the Opera browser. They wanted to create a browser that was that really conformed to the standards, and so they created the Opera browser. And he was named Chief Technology Officer for Opera in 2013. In 2006, he finally finished his PhD at the University of Oslo. This was after he developed all the cascading style sheet stuff at CERN at W3C. Guess what? His PhD focused on cascading style sheets.
Why not?
Doesn't it make sense? Because that's what he'd been working on for the last few years. And he put down all the foundation work that led the theoretical foundation work that led to cascading style sheets. Now, he's also a politician for the Pirate Party of Norway.
Arr.
Now, see, the Pirate Party of Norway, you remember we had these Pirate Bay that was
yes.
All this illegal downloads that was either in Sweden or Norway in that area. And the people were arresting the people behind it. So the people behind this formed parties, the Pirate Party, and they got people elected so that the local countries would not be so harsh on the Pirate Bay people.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a member of the Pirate Bay Pirate Party in Norway, and it's focused on transparency and state management and privacy on the Internet, and I think also and non-prosecution of illegal downloads.
Mm-hmm.
I'm adding that parenthetically.
Why not?
Yeah. William Lee lives in Oslo, Norway. He's like a rabble rouser. He's currently lobbying against high-rise apartments and billboard advertising because he thinks it's corrupting the look and feel of Norway.
Ah.
And he just doesn't like it. In 1999, he was named to the MIT Technology Review TR100 as one of the top 100 innovators in the world under age 35. And so there you go, one of the standards activists and guy behind Cascading Style Sheets, Håkon Vium Lee.
I hope you're paying attention to the profile of
Håkon Vium Lee.
Because we have a prize riding on the line here in just a minute if you have the right knowledge and have fast fingers dialing the phone. Stand by, the pop quiz is next here on Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. Be right back.
Technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University innovative approach that turns marketable skills into an employable edge to get you hired faster in today's hottest fields like cybersecurity, data mining, and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the classroom, right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn-by-doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now, here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Welcome back to Classroom of the Airways. And of course, if it's a classroom, there is going to be an assessment. In this case, it's a pop quiz. And if you get the correct answer to the pop quiz, you'll win two tickets to fine dining at the Escoffier Dining Room or the Kareem Dining Room. And maybe one of these days we'll add the dining room there at Alexandria, our new Alexandria.
Please get around to that.
Yeah. Earlier in the show, we're talking about Hockham VM Lee. Of course, he was the man who proposed the cascading style sheets for displaying information on the web. Where was he working at the time that he proposed cascading style sheets, or who was he working with?
This is kind of
where
hard.
Or who was he working with?
Right.
When he proposed the cascading style sheets in 1994.
So get this. I'm sorry. You're all out. Okay.
I'm all out.
So if you have the answer, you better get dialing now. It's if you're calling from west of Oxford University College in West Georgia, it is 877-936-9333. If you're calling from east of Oslo, Norway, it's 877-936-9333. And of course, the wild card line for everybody else, 877-936-9333. And by the way, I love how you've mastered the pronunciation of.
Yes,
you've really done nicely with that.
Thank you very much.
Anyway,
if you're calling in from Galapagos Islands, you can reach us on Skype. Simply connect to Tech Talk Radio 1, and your call will be forwarded here free of charge.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I almost forgot to give you the opportunity to allow that option.
Yeah, so you could be sitting on one of those giant turtles as you're calling in.
Probably not.
That would not. Yeah, probably not. You'd be arrested.
877-936-933. Hurry up, guys.
There we go. The top cities for tech startups.
Mm-hmm.
We've got here, Associated Press came out, the top cities. Now, these are the cities that have the biggest VC capital money coming in for startups. I thought it was kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
As you'd expect, San Francisco was number one, San Jose, California, number two. That's, of course, Silicon Valley, where we go San Francisco and San Jose, Silicon Valley. Those are the top areas. Number three is New York. Number four is Boston. Boston had 158 deals. By the way, San Francisco had 506 deals, and San Jose had 237 deals. Next was Los Angeles, then Oakland. I'm going to just take us down to Washington. Seattle, Provo, Utah, and number nine on the list, Washington, D.C.
How about that?
With 77 deals.
Mm-hmm.
So this actually is not a bad area for tech, being number nine on the list. Number 20 on the list was Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, with 35 wins.
What is going on here? I think our pronunciation thing has decided to give us something else. Okay, goodbye. Hockham VM Lee. All right. Hey, guess what? We have somebody on the phone.
Okay,
let's go to,
very good.
If we shall. Line number one, this is going to be Colt, who is calling us from Alexandria, Virginia. Colt, good morning. How are you, sir?
Great. Great yeah. Show today, guys.
Thank you very much, sir. Appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you. Hockham VM Lee, where was he working?
Got a little goofy.
Well, we were a little. We're just a little goofy this morning. We couldn't help it. I think it's the coffee.
I think there's something in Doc's McCafe over there.
Could have been. No.
And no elevator to the sky.
No elevator to the sky. No. That one really gets hot. Hokey when we do that.
Yeah.
Now, where was VM Lee working, or who was he working with when he came up with cascading style sheets?
He was working at CERN with Tim Berners-Lee.
That is correct. You
got
both of them. Very good.
Very good.
Excellent.
Colt, thanks so much for listening. Thanks for calling. And hang on. Andrew's going to be right with you. Doc, we're out of time. We're out of time.
Oh, my goodness.
Can you believe
that? The show just shot by like this.
Uh-huh.
Now, listen, we love all your emails. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu. We'd also like you to go by the website there at Stratford University and check out the programs there. We've got a lot of programs in IT, health sciences, culinary arts, hospitality, and business and accounting. And tell them that you heard about them on Tech Talk Radio.
Indeed, which is heard here every Saturday on Federal News Radio at 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Next week's the time change, is it? No, it's not. It's the Saturday after that. We'll see you next week at 9 o'clock.
Commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio on the air at 1500 AM and online. online at federalnewsradio.com, the only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Coming up on the radio today, we've got a football game. We've got Navy midshipmen taking on the San Jose Spartans today at the Navy Marine Corps Stadium. That's going to be at 11:30. Homecoming for the mids. Sunny, nice, high of 70 right now outside. It is 58 degrees at 10 o'clock.